In this episode, discover how to use LinkedIn to generate awareness, develop trust, and close deals.
Discover how video can help you achieve your sales and marketing goals. It all starts right here in Todd Hartley's Video Marketing Mastery.
What is up? What is up? You know, I'm in Scottsdale, Arizona. I live about 5 miles from the office. It's not even 5 miles. It's 7 minutes, including traffic lights. And I come here during this COVID timeout period or whatever the hell we're calling it to use the office to create my content and to develop the information that I'm going to share for my thought leadership, for my relationship development. My goal is to use the tool like LinkedIn to create awareness, stay top of mind, add massive value, and then develop that relationship where they come to my website or they hit me up on a DM and we start a conversation. So to help you do the same, like to help you use LinkedIn like a boss, so you can develop your own thought leadership, so you could be helpful and generate relationships of trust, I wanted to spend time today with Richard Moore, who's going to be joining us in a few moments. Richard helps consultants get clients on LinkedIn using sales and content tactics. We're going to go to London in a few moments and have that conversation. But first, I use LinkedIn as an opportunity to stay top of mind, to add massive value, and to be helpful. So why helpful? Helpful is really important. It's my guiding light. You see, helpful is the new viral. I bring it up because if you can be helpful and share information and knowledge to your target audience, they're going to come back each and every time looking for more value from you. And in doing so, you end up becoming the magnet on your topic that people are attracted to. You are the one that stays top of mind when they come onto LinkedIn. Your goal should be the person who's popping up in the top of their feed consistently. You should be unique and interesting, but never at the expense of being helpful or trustworthy. Make sense? And for me, I see LinkedIn as like a logical extension for what I was doing when I was a talk show host. Creating content, sharing value, developing followers, and then those followers end up either becoming customers or they share my information and introduce me to other people that fall into my funnel, and I develop relationships with them and convert them into customers. My big goal is to make sure that I'm consistent on LinkedIn. And in this interview, you're going to hear some of my best tactics. You're also going to hear from the Richard Moore, who's going to share with you his. Sit back, enjoy this interview, and if more questions come up along the way, like questions I didn't answer or Richard didn't answer, please post them in the comments or go to LinkedIn and send me a DM and ask me a specific question because I will get back to you. Why? Because I like people, like genuinely like people, like I'm social. And I didn't even realize going into COVID how much I really like people and need that interaction. For those of you that have already taken me up on this, you already know I reply back in a timely manner. I give value. I'm not asking. And my goal is to develop a relationship with you. So if you know me from the podcast, or maybe you've seen my information on Facebook or as I've been speaking and you've been following the podcast and you haven't bridged that gap yet and come over to LinkedIn, please take a few moments, go to LinkedIn. Hit me up and say, yo, dude, I'm from the podcast. And we'll chat it up, okay? I like meeting people. So sit back, listen to Richard Moore. And if you need more information on how to speed up your sales process remotely, just go to wirebuzz.com/remote-sales. I've got 20 minutes of free learning. LinkedIn reminds me of a story that when I think about the responsibility I have and what I'm trying to do on LinkedIn, it reminds me of when I was in sixth grade, and I had to do a report on a family member that I admire. And the teacher gave us a series of questions she wanted us to do the report on, and I interviewed my dad, submitted the report, and one of the questions was, how do you define a friend? So I asked my dad, and the direct quote my dad gave me is, quote, a friend is somebody who regularly gives you money. So I submitted it in my report, and a week later, when I got it back, there was a big red circle on the top with words on the center of it that said, "See me." And I went and spoke with the teacher, and I was scared. I remember the teacher was like, "That is not the proper definition, Todd, of a friend. And it's important that you know that." So I went back and I told my dad that I got in trouble and that he should know that that's not the proper definition of a friend. Friend is not somebody that regularly gives you money, the teacher said. And my dad said to me, "Listen, and don't you ever forget this. I'm an entrepreneur, and somebody that regularly gives me money is a friend because they're making my life easier and I'm going to care for them like a friend. And don't go to school tomorrow and tell your teacher she's wrong. She's just not an entrepreneur." And when you're on LinkedIn, I want you to think about the people that you're interacting with. You should be interacting with them as if they're your new friend, that you're going to help make their lives better. Add value, develop relationships, generate trust, move them through your process, convert them into customers, and make more friends. All right, all right. One of my favorite topics in the world is how we use social media and LinkedIn or Facebook to generate leads, to grow awareness, and to move those leads into our sales process. Now, every business under the sun is slightly different. But the reality is, in this world today, where you can't actually physically get in front of your prospects, where 82% of buyers say they want to go on their own rabbit hole journey before they're ready to talk to a salesperson, well, this is actually the time for you to become really good at remote sales. And often, not in all cases, but often, lead generation in this world starts on platforms like LinkedIn or Facebook and then moving them through your sales process. So I wanted to spend some time with you today and talk with you about the tactics, really recognizing we're all struggling with this core thing of getting in front of prospects and guiding them. I want to share with you some of the best tactics for using LinkedIn to generate awareness, develop trust, and close deals. And that's why I'm joined right now by Richard Moore. He is across the pond in London. He helps consultants get clients on LinkedIn using sales and content tactics. Richard, thanks for joining me on the Toddcast.
Absolute pleasure. And if you call it a Toddcast, what a genius name. I love that. But thanks for having me.
I'm a marketer.
Man. I love it. Marketers, exactly.
Marketers come up with this.
Yeah, exactly right.
So, but I also have the other marketing problem where my wife would hate to go shopping with me because I look at products and right. I start to talk with her about the marketing issues. And I'm sure you're the same way, dude.
I can relate. I find it difficult to watch TV with my wife because, you know, an advert break will come up, come on. I'll be like, "Oh, it's just shameless. They're doing this and they're doing this." She's like, "Just leave it. I know. I get it. You're breaking it down." I'm like, "I wouldn't buy this." And she's like, "I love that you know the theory. Let's just leave it with it." So it's good fun to break it down though.
It sure is, but it sure gets annoying. But let's break down LinkedIn if we could, because LinkedIn quickly became the essential tool for every business, which means people like you and me became the ninjas of this new world to help people sell at faster rates. And few people are doing a better job on LinkedIn than you are, bro. So let's start talking about LinkedIn from a high level. And then I'm going to want to get into things like DMs and how we use DMs. I want to talk with you about how we sell the emotion. And then I also want to talk with you about ejection handles, which often comes later in the sales process. But I love the topic. And so I think it's an essential part for letting people into our world so they can optimize their process. 100%. When you're starting on LinkedIn, you're using your content, right, to develop relationships and pique awareness and attention. Talk to me about the process that Richard Moore goes through.
Yeah, I think it's important to understand the place of content is not as the whole thing. A lot of people try and content think, "Well, I just post content, right?" And then like it all works out. I might go viral and I just get loads of DMs and things. It's utter rubbish. Content acts, the best way to look at it is content is gravity. And then when people might see your content, if it's interesting enough, they start coming into orbit around it. And what happens is you validate that great content and their decision to come and check it out with more of the same. And I think if people can realize that a good amount of frequency and consistency can get people slowing down and spending time around you and then getting into your ecosystem and then over time watching you and saying, hey, you know, I love Todd's stuff. Oh, notification, Todd's just posted something. I'll go check that out. They naturalize and familiarize themselves to the kind of things you talk about. And really the value here is in that you can host a party. I mean, I'm here today. I'm contributing to your conversation and I love doing it. And we do that probably with other people as well. But you have to host your own party too. When you do that, people see you as something of a thought leader or an expert based on the expertise you're sharing. But moreover, it creates on a human level the ability to give some familiarity. And on the smallest seed we need to work from is that familiarity and trust is where it all starts from. And that's where we allow ourselves to then take this to interesting conversations and people want to engage with you more because they are getting used to seeing you. And the bottom line is this is the big opportunity for everyone. I don't have to be, and I should be the best in my world, and I should do my best to always improve my craft, but I don't have to be the number one person for my thing. I have to be good because I should provide a good service. But if I'm not the greatest person, but I have the familiarity of an audience, right? If I'm not the one who's got 40 years experience, I've got 20. And if I'm not the one who's got all the brand design, but I've got a good looking presentation, that's enough for the human animal side of an audience who are wanting to spend time around me because they're just the kind of fallen for me. They've fallen for the way I say things and speak and so on. That's what it really comes down to.
Okay, dude, that's beautiful. I love everything you just said. Talking about planting seeds, people need to understand that the seed starts to sprout and before you know it, you're in their process. But the seed, you also dropped a really important word in there, which is frequency.
Yeah.
Recognizing that you have to stay top of mind in order to allow that seed to grow because not everybody's going to react on the very first piece of content or video that you post. Mm-hmm. What is the Richard Moore frequency of content that you recommend for people in order to stay top of mind so that relationship grows?
It's important because when you have to have balance here, knowing that posting content is not a job. It is an additional thing you do as part of your marketing for, and you should be running a business. You've got a job to do. So the answer is once a day is what I do. And it's more than enough to do it once a day. And it works with the fact that I'm time poor and can't sit here all day posting nonstop. But it also works with the fact that if someone who might buy my service doesn't see it that day because they didn't get to LinkedIn because their husband had a migraine and they had to look after the kids, well, the next day they see a bit of content. You've got to understand that once every month is pointless because you may be on someone's radar momentarily, but in the main, most of your audience will miss you.
Yeah, I actually look at it that way also. By the way, for those of you that are submitting in comments, please know that I do see it on my end. And if the question relates to what we're discussing, I will pull that sucker right into the conversation. Hey, Richard, the top of mind and frequency is really important. And I noticed this at the beginning of COVID when most people started slowing down and they hit their couch and they started taking bong hits and they took a couple weeks off and they crushed Tiger King. And yeah. What I discovered was when everybody else slowed down, I dropped it into fifth gear and sped up. But what people started noticing was my frequency and my value. So anybody that I interacted with would say, dude, you're like blowing up. You're everywhere. Yeah. That is a indicator of frequency and value. So as you go through the process, are you throughout the day thinking about the next value that you can provide to your audience? Like, how do you collect that information and know what's the value that's going to get them to think, damn, Richard is the man?
Yeah, it's a really good point. And I get asked all the time, like, you know, what should the content be? How do I know what to post? You should be a practitioner. And what that means is you shouldn't be sitting scrolling through social. Sure, you post. Sure, you show up for the comments in the audience. But you should be a practitioner. Most of your day should be helping people with the thing you sell. And so right there, if you're doing a good job, you will have case study after case study, anecdote after anecdote. I remember when I was in London a while back before COVID hit, like every time I left an office, I wouldn't name the client, but I would be like, here's the lesson today. Here's what we were teaching. Like, here's the thing I was training these guys on. It's content all the time. And if you have nothing to talk about, perhaps you're not being out there enough. Perhaps you're not engaging with people enough. But one thing I also do is create a system so that every week I know I will have content. So my system, my pillar content, is my weekly live show. In 4 weeks' time, it will be 4 consecutive years of weekly live shows. So every Monday, I do a live stream. There's a 204th week this week. And that's an hour. People submit questions on a topic that they choose. So it's their show. I answer their questions. And then my video team break that down. Like, here's content. Here's relevant. Like, last week was all DM related stuff because that was the topic. So by being immersed in an ecosystem or an area or a space that I'm deeply interested in, not only am I personally thinking of things, but they're coming across my radar all the time. But I think what's really important as well is to remember that if you're not that practitioner, if you're not actually spending time on the pitch with clients, you don't have as much to talk about. We can all get a book off a shelf and just paraphrase something, but why don't you talk about real world things you're actually doing? Like your engagement with Tony Robbins is an example of something that right now you can share. And there's lessons all over the place, I'm sure. And that's what people want to show up for.
They want to be a part of the process. They want to be part of the discovery. They want to be taken along the journey. You know, I look at LinkedIn is at its best is a two-way conversation.
Yeah.
And not somebody just pushing out little commercials or print ads about themselves. You want to be relatable. And this gets us to really one of the core conversations about DMs. But we just got a question from an audience member on LinkedIn that said, is there a right timing for posting, evenings or lunchtime? Richard, give your take on this, and then I'm probably going to jump in and add some additional value here.
Firstly, I always have this saying, there's no wrong or right, there's what works. There's no rules. This is still the Wild West, right? We've been doing this, like the most advanced senior people in this have been doing it 2.5 years. That's it on LinkedIn. Honestly, it's new. But you've got to have some context. Think about the people you're targeting. So, like, for instance, 70% of my audience is US. And in the main, I hit US. That's where my focus is. So it's afternoon. If I do anything earlier than 3 p.m., well, I'm not capturing the West Coast. So I want to make sure.
3 p.m. London time.
3 p.m. London
time. Something 3 p.m. London time. Your window is off where your target audience lives, right?
Yeah. So I do 3 p.m. London time because that's 8 a.m. West Coast. But that also means I'm 10 a.m. East Coast. So I'm covering the U.S. and I've got my Europe side as well. So you can try and be really granular, like, well, what would lunchtime be? Why would people look at content? They look at content for a break. Maybe I do lunchtime or end of the day when they're not working. You can maybe overthink these things. I think it's intelligent to not do it. I mean, there was one guy I remember once who said, I post in the middle of the night because entrepreneurs who I target are always up really late. I was like, okay. But the truth is, if your audience is tucked up in bed, they're not going to see it till the next day. And one of the critical parts of content success on LinkedIn is the first hour. If you don't get engagement in the first hour, it goes to the graveyard because the algorithm is saying, oh, so this content's not very interesting, then we won't further distribute it. So you need people engaging right away.
Dude, I love that. I've recognized it. I've identified it in my results. The best marketers are going to be the people that are, like Richard said, practitioners. Yeah. But you can't just practice at the point of engagement. You got to go back and look at the data. The data is where all your decisions are. So, you know, Richard's targeting a US audience. I'm targeting a US audience, but I live in the wild, wild west of Scottsdale, Arizona, in the American Southwest. But that doesn't mean that I post in, you know, when it's appropriate in Scottsdale, because I probably have one or two clients in Arizona. Most of my clients are in New York City or Silicon Valley or Chicago. Mm-hmm. So I always post when I know New York is in its morning commute. Mm. To me, that's a vital time because people are on a subway or they're on their walk or they're doing something. And I want to be part of that. So of all the places in the world, New York is my number two audience size because I cater to them.
Yeah. Right?
Important question.
I do feel that mornings in the main outweigh like afternoons and evenings a lot more. And good to understand, this isn't Facebook. On LinkedIn, it's much more, it's still got that business context. And what that does is it drives this idea of kind of using in the working hours, and working hours for people actually start at breakfast. Yes. Because at breakfast, wrong or right, at breakfast, it's phones out. What emails can I get rid of? What stuff can I delete? What's going on right now? What's the latest notifications I've got? Because we all get out of bed typically, and check through what's going on and see what we can clear out, or what things are piquing interest at early morning.
Right. This is the new newspaper.
Right? But this is a really good point, though. And like, you'll know this, that we need to embrace this idea that we should host our own show. People don't show up for you because you're contributing to a conversation. They show up to you because you're hosting a party. And for instance, video or just opinions and ideas, if you've got frequency, in the same way as millions show up every week when the latest Game of Thrones or Stranger Things or whatever is on, they show up for your content. They're like, they consume your thing. For their world, their geeky little area of interest in accountancy or, on viral video or whatever it might be, or mindset work, you're their person, you're their video, you're their Netflix. So you need to make sure that you are, again, it's the frequency thing, show up consistently, then people go, that's where I spend my time. For instance, every Monday, East Coast, 8 a.m., it's Richard's show, and you have the same people show up every single week. Yes. It just makes sense to be their show.
And you have to be consistent about it. You have to develop not only frequency, but regularity on the time, so the expectations are set. You know, I started my career in radio. I started as a talk show host. And I love the whole idea of bringing people along the journey. Richard, a little bit of an example. My last episode of my podcast is behind the scenes of my Tony Robbins webinar day.
Right.
And I'll tell you, man, I had enough to juggle with Tony. What did I need to do? Create a podcast out of it. But the beauty of it was I got to bring people that already know, like, and trust me, that have already invested in my journey along on one of the most important days. And in doing so, they got to see me warts and all as I was going through one of the more stressful moments. All right, so let's get down and dirty in it. I really want to start talking with you about where you spent your time last week on DMs. But in the interest of having a three-way conversation between you, me, and the audience, we did get another question that needs some clarity. Something tells me we need to help this person out. A LinkedIn user said, so do you, and this goes back to frequency and posting on East Coast time and so on. So do you send the post to the East and the West and Europe on different times? So like one post maybe three times, Richard. What are your thoughts on this?
Firstly, what an amazing coincidence that this person's name's LinkedIn user. How crazy, right? Anyway, there's loads of them. Like, it's a really common name, it seems. So look, it's a really good question. Post it at a time where you can kind of overlap the time zone. So I've said 3 p.m., but you've got to experiment with this because it's slightly different for everyone and things change. So I typically am like 3 or 8 or 10 p.m. often because I want to get it, but I only will post it once. And here is one very important tip or secret for you. You post it once and the idea is you want to drive engagement. So that first hour of getting comments and you know, you hook up with some people in the DMs and say, hey, do you want to check this out? If it's of relevancy to them, post it once. And then the next day you have something else. But if it doesn't get seen, and posts, unless they do really well, typically die after about 24 hours or so. Or interestingly, if you post something else, it will kind of cut the bandwidth for the previous one a bit. So, you know, leave it out there for 24 hours. But if you've posted something 3 months ago, it is definitely not getting looked at. So almost all the top people, and I'm doing this as well, will look back as well for content. So for instance, if I have a great post that just, and it happens all the time, no matter who you are, that just misfired. You know, it did rubbish. It got like a couple of thousand views and, you know, it happens all the time, right? What you do is you go back 3 months or 4 months or 7 months or 9 months and you go, right, copy and paste. Yeah. Download the video, repost the video, new content, because no one remembers what you posted 6 months ago. Those that do, here's the hack, because people are like, yeah, but some people will. Those that remember that content are the ones who follow you religiously anyway. So they're going to love it. And occasionally you get someone go, oh, I love when you post this video. I really enjoyed this one. And the great reason for doing this is, firstly, you're recycling. Secondly, LinkedIn doesn't throttle duplicate content yet in that way. And obviously, you've got to check and make sure the context is right. If it's like, hey, everything's fine, there's no such thing as lockdown, you need to make sure you get that right. But thirdly, in a world where we're time poor and are running our own businesses, we don't have time to write content every day. So repurpose twice a week. Now you've got those extra 2 days covered. And if you can only do 3 posts a week, now you can do 5. After a few months, you can go back. And it's a great way of driving. Remember, at the very least, 3 months ago, 10,000 people didn't even know who you were. Now these new contacts and followers are seeing new content in their mind.
Yeah, that's wonderful, man. I actually today on LinkedIn dropped a video that I created 6 months ago. And as I was running out of the house, I realized, oh, this is my target window of the day. Drop that video. But I know it's so valuable that it's got legs that'll carry on over again. Hey, James Sweeney just asked, what about your show? Where do I find it? What time is it? How do I stream it? Give us a lowdown on all that for James.
So thank you, James. And I think it was nice to see you on the stream. Thank you. So it's called Startup Business Q&A. I do it every Monday at 8 a.m. Eastern time or 1 p.m. UK time. And on Facebook, what I do, Todd, is like on a Saturday, I often say, what topic do you want? People vote for it. So in my group. On Sunday, you voted for this topic. What questions do you want? And this is just a really nice way of curating content, is saying, what do you want? And I'll talk about it. And then you say, like, well, if you want to talk about, for instance, DMs, well, then ask your questions then. And then, of course, you can go live and tag those that ask the questions. And you're creating a show. This is how I did my newsletter. My newsletter is, what do you want in the newsletter? Great. Here's the newsletter you wanted. Tag all the people. And that's how you serve an audience as well. So that's when I do it every week, nice and live on LinkedIn and Facebook.
All right. So for the listeners, there's a lot we can unpack here. I want to spend a moment just talking with you about the give and take of the relationship that Richard has laid out. We discussed it earlier. It should be like a two-way conversation where the host, the subject matter expert, is open to learning from people. And in doing so, they end up bringing those people into the show. Did you notice how when you guys have submitted questions, it's important for us to be posting those questions on the screen? It's us bringing you into the show so you can be part of the process, because it's much better when it's a two or three-way conversation.
Yeah.
Now, let's get into DMs for a moment, because this might be one of the more underutilized or under-discussed areas of LinkedIn, and there's so much value. It's like it's going down in the DM for a reason. Is the DM how you set up the sale, develop that relationship, have a private conversation, and kind of move them to the next stage when it's appropriate?
Yeah, I think we need to be clear on where it's applicable, because for some low ticket, high volume products, so for instance, my courses. So I've got a course on Udemy called The Basics of Sales. It's the highest rated course on all of Udemy for LinkedIn basics, but it's 40 quid. That's like $50. So I'm not going to go and groom and get onto sales calls and things with these kind of people. It's like, it's an organic sell of that thing. But the higher end coaching, this kind of stuff, you don't no doubt do, or the kind of things that like people with a coaching product do, you can't sell unless there's trust in there. So you have to get them on a call. The DMs are where the magic happened. And again, we're being contextual. Yes, it can work on other platforms very well as well. And I cut my teeth on Facebook 6 years ago doing this. But here, we need to understand psychologically how people tend to use LinkedIn. They're not necessarily all evolved people who are up to date with the bleeding edge changes of LinkedIn. More, the majority of people see LinkedIn like we saw it 6, 7, 8 years ago. Of, you know, it's a resume place. Like, oh, there's a bit of content or something. So on LinkedIn, unlike Facebook or Instagram, where the thing you do is post and comment, on LinkedIn, the thing you do is you do nothing. On LinkedIn, you lurk, you say nothing, because it's business. You don't want to put your head up, right? Because you might say something which impacts your business and reputation. So you need to be mindful that considerably less, by comparison, people will say things, massively offset by the fact that the algorithm is so generous, so you get a lot of action. But mostly you get people engaging and chatting with you on the comments who aren't necessarily senior decision makers. especially in the B2B world, the senior decision makers will see you. And the tell that there's an interest isn't in a comment, it's in a profile view. Because what you're doing there is leveraging human curiosity, which is huge in terms of persuasion. If someone's interested in you, they'll be like, who is this guy? Who's this Todd Hartley? And then, you know, after this, the people watching this live stream will be checking you out and seeing who you are, just like we do after a social situation. We see their Instagram. So the DMs are crucial because what we're doing is we're taking them to a safe place where they don't have to be public in asking a question, showing vulnerability. Imagine you're a mindset coach. No one's going to be like, yeah, I have a real problem with confidence in my world. I'm CEO of a Fortune 1000 company. It's just not going to happen, right? Whereas in the DMs, you can speak to them contextually. You can say, hey, at the very least, thanks so much for checking out the profile. What caught your eye? Or I really appreciate you looking at the, you liking the video or whatever. But the DMs are a safe space where you can cultivate and network and have a proper conversation. That absolutely, you pivot there onto where your sales process kicks in.
Beautiful, dude. Okay, so here's one of the things that I'm trying to do and I lay out in the strategy is I look at LinkedIn as being zone one. Zone one is discovery. And the goal in zone one is to move people, first develop a relationship and not speed them through the process, but develop the relationship and move them to zone two, which is my own property, which is my website, where I can bring them down a journey or a squeeze page or a landing page where they schedule a time to meet with me. Okay. And I know that LinkedIn just rolled out some more tools and even funnels on LinkedIn that you can start to operate on. And I'll be doing an episode on that coming soon. But I love having people having the context that it doesn't all have to happen on LinkedIn for it to be effective. You know, in fact, if you move them in through your existing process, you can still get some wins along the way. Hey, I just got a question from Jason Shepard who said, what are your thoughts on hashtags to link posts, attract content followers, et cetera? It feels like on LinkedIn, you got to be really cautious on over hashtagging as a strategy because they tend to decrease the universe that's going to see it. What's your hashtag philosophy, Richard?
It's a really good question, Jason. Thanks for sharing this one. So LinkedIn themselves, I was in San Francisco last year. I went to HQ and had lunch with some of the people in the teams. It's so crucial to learn from the people who know, like the product marketing managers at LinkedIn. And there's so many different theories by people who think they're experts. The best thing to do is speak to the people who built the thing, who have tested it and got the stats. And the truth is, optimal is three hashtags. That's what LinkedIn says. It's like you will get the best bang for your buck there. But it goes deeper than the data. Think about it with empathy. If you are looking at a post that has a wall of tags, hashtags or tags of people, what does it say? It says spam. And whether it is or isn't, a judgment is made. So if my brain tells me it's spam, whether it is or isn't. So it's so important to remember the readability is important. It needs to look like you're not trying to game everyone to try and look at your post, but you're actually nobly focused on value. So my suggestion here, Jason, is you do three hashtags. Do them at the bottom, right at the bottom of your posts, unless it makes sense to throw a hashtag in into the post itself. One thing to think about, though, is readability is a huge thing. It's huge because before your cerebral thinking part of your brain decides to read a post, the instinctual animal part of the brain says, is this worth it? I want to be lazy. Is this going to be easy on the eye? So readability, line breaks, even emojis that kind of signpost the way through are valuable. And a hashtag's useful here because when you put a hashtag on a word, it turns it blue. Little hacks like that mean it just keeps it punctuated with interest for the eyeballs. But I would say use three. One could be yours. So what was the one you used at the start of this session, Todd? That was your hashtag. I can't remember what it was. It was a marketing hashtag you used. It was really clever.
Oh, maybe remote selling? Could have been.
It was like a fusion of words. I can't remember what it was. But even if you made something up, for instance, so I have rich tips because a long time ago, people were like, we want to follow, but it's not so easy. What's the hashtag? But I have two additional that are contextual. So I will have hashtag sales, hashtag marketing. And you might think, come on, man, you're not going to trend for that. This is LinkedIn. This is the golden time of LinkedIn. Try trending the hashtag sales on Twitter. You won't. Try it on here. I will trend almost every day on LinkedIn. Isn't it crazy? It's because you cannot miss right now, because almost, remember I said it before, you've got 690 million people, 3 million do content a week. Almost no one does content. So your share, I think it's like 9 billion impressions a week. The share of the pie is insane. So you, like, I have a new client a few months ago who works in coffee. They're trending within the first week for hashtag coffee. Not something contrived, coffee. So you should be using like contextual to the post, and you'd be surprised. You'll trend if you do the engagement thing right.
It's really a fun result. Like in my office, one of our favorite games is when my content is trending as the top post for either hashtag sales or hashtag marketing or hashtag business or entrepreneur. Like those feel like golden ones for me. And yet I see a lot of people that are even nicheifying more than that, like remote selling. And to me, if you can trend for sales, you're better off trending for sales than something that is niched down 100%. To remote selling. You agree with that?
Yeah, I do, because you'll have millions who are following sales, but some people will actively search against the hashtag sales, because you can search now content, not just people and companies and industries, you can search content. So it makes a lot of sense to do it. But it was worth keeping your finger on the pulse, because, for instance, there are hashtags that are evolving. So social selling is now a solid hashtag, whereas a couple of years ago, it maybe wouldn't be as much. But you're totally right. Why not leverage it if you can trend for basically anything you like?
Right. I look at it like trend for the parent topic instead of the child topic. And when the child hashtag is easy to get, but the parent one is also easy to get, go for the parent one. And then once the parent one becomes so saturated, then start owning the niched child one.
Yeah, because the truth is, in a few years' time, it won't be so easy. But like right now, you're going to make use of this golden time.
Yes, so true. Okay, look, I know we've invested a lot of time together, but I need to talk to you about one of my favorite topics in the world, and it's about objection handles. And it sounds like an obnoxious topic to people, but practice makes perfect. Let's discuss first what an objection is. In the sales process, an objection can happen at any stage when somebody gives you but pushback. And whatever that pushback is, and it's a common objection that Richard and I love to nerd out on, because those common objections you should be practicing for, you should be preparing to handle. Richard, talk to me about practice making perfect and how you can train yourself to respond appropriately when you get objection handles so you can use them to your advantage.
Yeah, I think it's important to really rewire what we've learned or been taught or believe about objections, because there's a lot of negativity surrounding them. The way to look at them is there's two types, really simply. There is the knee-jerk objections you get at the start when you have basically screwed up the perception. And this happens a lot more on, say, cold calls. If you screw up the perception, the response will be, I'm not interested, which means go away, you're irritating me. The other type, which comes further into your process, the one we're really talking about here, are real objections. Real objections you need to view as feedback. The reason why, and this isn't some cute twist on it or spin on it so that you don't feel as bad, and I'm not going to say things like objections are your friend, because that's not particularly helpful. The reason why I'm talking about objections as feedback is because for someone to give you a real objection, Richard, you know what? I mean, it feels right. It's just there's this thing. That feedback will only happen if there's a level of buy-in. And what it translates to isn't, I'm not interested. It translates to, I kind of get it. I'm kind of bought into the point that I'm actually willing to share and stay with you here. I've invested, and there's a level of lean-in and receptivity we're going to continue discussing. However, I'm not there yet. Here's just where I'm missing something. And sure, they may not be telling you everything or all of the objections, but usually they're sharing that because they're saying, I get it, but not these bits. Like my worldview right now is I'm missing something. So a really good tip for objections isn't just to wait for them. There's two other things to think about. One is if you feel it, you're usually right. So if you think there's an objection, call it. because your gut and instinct, as we're all masters of the art of communication by the time we're adults, you should be leveraging that. If you feel it in your gut, something's not quite right, they're really all over this, now they've gone a bit quiet. Where am I dropped the body? It feels like you're going to make quite, like, be open about it. But then there's the other type, which is my favorite, which is preemptive. And this is why practicing matters. This is what Todd's talking about here. If you spend enough time doing pitches, doing sales calls, and handling new prospects, you will find that there are really only 6 to 8 main objections in the world, variants of the same theme. And you, for your proposition, will typically get 1 or 2 that tend to come up all the time. And that feedback is saying to you, this is the way you're presenting your service. This is the problem you're coming up against. So the best way to handle an objection, surprisingly, is not retrospectively when it comes up, but preemptively ahead of that. So a really crap example, just to prove the point, is no one asks.
I love crap examples.
Okay, good. You're okay. So a good example then is no one asks you what your name is, because you've preemptively given that as a, hi, I'm Richard Moore. So they don't need to ask that. So if you use that philosophy, imagine the problems that you, in all of the people listening right now, what issue do you keep coming up against all the time, over and over and over and over again? So not just practicing that, but how can you build the solution to that objection into the front end, the value proposition? If you only ever get, it's far too expensive, well, then think about positioning and so on, but also how do you handle that at the front so that you blow it out of the water so it's no longer an objection? And coaching people on this point means that they now enjoy this process where it's no longer an issue that comes up at the end, because the prospect now has it already. They're already aware that the price thing is kind of handled by a preemptive strike.
I love this. I'm in a lot of our company's sales pitches. In fact, I'm in a lot less today than when we got started, but I started to notice early that, like Richard mentioned, there's some common objections that are going to come up consistently. And when you preemptively address them as you're going through your teaching part of your presentation, you can knock down those bowling pins. So yep. There's less pins in the way of getting the sale. And yep. One of the ways that I do it is I always show and tell. So when I'm presenting to a client, I'm going to put up a slide that I'm going to teach them, and it's going to knock down that objection, which is going to make it easier later on. Mm. But there's also another way to do it, and it's complementary. It's not in substitute. Mm. The complementary way is, after you've addressed it, follow up with a personalized video where you're re-explaining it to your prospect. Now, the reason some of you are like, dude, that's a lot of work. That's unnecessary. But if you have to start over with yeah. a brand new prospect, that's even more work. You're and right. the goal is to get them to the finish line. So for me, I'll grab my phone and I will start filming them. Hey, Richard, it was great talking with you. One of the questions that came up during our conversation was dot, dot, dot. And the best way to look at it is,
yeah.
And I'll send them that. Now, if it's easier for me to do it with slides and I can communicate better, when I say easier, I mean easier for me to transfer the knowledge into their head so the objection mm-hmm. drops, then I'm going to put myself on camera and I'm going to put my slides right here next to me and I'm going to coach them through it. Yeah. I'm going to send it to them. And within moments, I'm going to get back a reply that has some type of language of love in it.
Yeah.
And then I'm also going to know that I just moved them to the next stage of the sales process.
Yeah.
So tactically think about how you can move people with confidence and education, because like Richard mentioned earlier, the person that gets hired today is not the one with the biggest resume or the most experience. It's the one that demonstrates the greatest willingness mm-hmm. to be of help and to advocate for that person all the way through so they accomplish their goal. That's yeah. the person that you need to be when you're going through the sales process. So anytime you experience confusion from your prospect, where they're getting a little shaky or confused, follow up with a personalized video and yeah. nudge them to the next stage. Beautiful.
And the thing is that it's I'm overwhelmed, because I've been coaching sales in either a sales manager or coaching capacity since 2004. I started as a sales manager. So like what stands out is a huge number of salespeople, and this is from tiny deals to six figure and beyond, they will hope that it will probably sort itself out. Because if there's a good vibe and they kind of get on okay, they hope that objection will maybe go away. And the objection might be they just need to speak to someone else and like, oh, well, hopefully that person will sort itself out. that problem is there until such time as it is not there. There is no in between. And so if someone is thinking about a problem and bring it up, unless you handle it properly, it's still there. And you may think you've handled it, but until you've checked and you get some response from them going, yeah, I get it now. That makes it, I got, you know, and you feel that they're over that hump, it's still there, and it will stew and fester, and you end up with it being a real detriment to the deal.
Yep. And it'll stall out the deal until it gets resolved. Also, one of the other things is sometimes that objection isn't from your internal champion. Mm. Sometimes that objection is from your internal champion's boss that isn't on the call. So yeah, if you want to get to the next stage, you also have to educate not only your internal champion, but the boss, so you guys can get to the point where you're submitting a proposal or getting a yes. He's Richard Moore. He's a rock star here on LinkedIn on how to help you generate leads, develop that relationship, and move them through the next step in the process. Richard, therichardmoore.com is where you go for more information. Richard, where else can people find out about you?
Thank you, man. I really appreciate it. You can find me on LinkedIn. Let's do that. So it's linkedin.com/in, then Richard James Moore. Richard Moore was taken, unfortunately. So Richard James Moore. And or you go to therichardmoore.com. You've got all of my channels at the bottom of the homepage. But I would love to connect and get in conversation as well. So thanks a lot.
Oh, it's my pleasure, man. And for any of you that would love to learn about remote selling and really how to optimize your business for reaching out, developing relationships, and moving people through the sales process, I've got 20 minutes of free Todd training on a landing page in video for you. I've made it very visual and simple, and you can get access to it at wirebuzz.com/remote-sales. He's Richard Moore. He's the Richard Moore. And I'm the Todd Hartley. We've had a blast talking with you guys. Yeah. Wish you all continued prosperity. Richard, thank you for joining me on the Toddcast.
You're very welcome, man. Thanks so much.
Well, that was really cool. A lot of good information from Richard Moore. And I think you could tell both of us just gave freely. And really, almost every relationship starts from people giving from their heart. The ultimate goal is helping people succeed. And I think you can tell from hearing Richard and also from me that we want to help people succeed and get to the next level. If you want to figure out how to guarantee that your videos generate ROI, you know, which is really what this is all about, return on investment, I've got a 5-part web-based mini course that's available for you. And it's free to the listeners of this podcast, and you can get access to it and learn my best tactics for generating a return on investment with your videos. And you can get access to it at wirebuzz.com/ROI, the 3 little letters that make everything in business work, matter, grow, and be fun again. Wirebuzz.com/ROI. And I will continue to do my job here at Wirebuzz. Trailblaze the way into the future for you. Show you where the road ahead is going, and be your crystal ball so you can adjust your business before other people. And when you get into the conference room with your team, you can be a video marketing master.